And joining us on Perspectives Book Club today is Brad Parks. Brad Parks, an award-winning author, and his latest book is The Last Act, a novel. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that novel in just a minute. But first of all, Brad, thank you so much for being with us.
Louis, it's a pleasure to be with you.
And Brad is a New York Times bestselling author. He is the only writer to have won the Seamus, Narrow, and Lefty Awards, three of American crime fiction's most prestigious prizes. His novels have been translated into 15 languages, and he's won critical acclaim across the globe, including stars from every major pre-publication review outlet. He's a graduate of Dartmouth. Parks is a former journalist with the Washington Post and the New Jersey Star-Ledger. He's now a full-time novelist, lives in Virginia with his wife and his two school-age children. So again, Brad, thank you so much for being with us. And first of all, let's start off with growing up. Were you always interested in writing and crime thrillers, all that stuff?
Well, not always, but I did write my first novel when I was seven, Louis. So I can't account for those first 6 years. But at age seven, I wrote I think you might call it a nature thriller. It was about a bear wandering through the wilderness with his friends. Except I spelled bear B-E-E-R. Anyway, my father loved that book, and it was self-published with the help of my mother's stapler, and it launched me on a wonderful career that continues today.
So tell me about the lost beer and what happens.
right. I think my parents do still have that, but really, I mean, my entree into the writing world is through journalism, and I started that also at a very young age. I was 14 years old, and I saw this ad in the newspaper that said sports writers needed. And the deal was it paid 50 cents a column inch, Louis, which was better money than I could make babysitting. And the assignment was to cover the Ridgefield High School girls basketball team. And I know this is radio, so your viewers can't see me, but I'm now about 6'1". I'm fully grown man, everything like that. At age 14, I was not quite the paragon of strapping malehood that I am now. I was short. I was fat. I had braces. I had this high, squeaky voice. But I figured that if I was the one who could put the girls' names in the newspaper, then they'd have to talk to me, and this was how I could get dates. This was the first of many lessons, Louis, in learning that not all of my writing goals would be accomplished. But I guess it was good to get that lesson out of the way early.
But you did go on to pursue a career in journalism, as you mentioned, and you did it for, 20 years or so, and you worked for these newspapers.
Yeah, if you count starting at age 14, yeah, I did it for 20 years.
And so tell me about when, after you did that high school gig, what happened next?
So I know Louis, you have a journalism background as well, and so I was like a lot of the people in journalism. I was hooked, man. I loved it, and so all through high school, all through college, I kept writing for basically anybody who would have me, and that led to some nice internships. I did an internship at the Boston Globe, at the Washington Post, and then eventually got hired at the Washington Post. This was in the mid '90s, Louis. It's a very different time. The Washington Post was actually expanding at that point, which is, I know, a very foreign concept in journalism now. But I was a sports writer for the first however many years of my career, until I figured out that writing sports was maybe not going to be compatible with family life. I was spending about 120 nights a year in a Marriott. And so when I turned 30, I got married and I switched over to news side. And my very first assignment was a quadruple homicide. Four people shot in the back of the head, left for dead in a vacant lot in the south part of Newark, New Jersey. And I went out there. I literally looked at the place in the soil where you could see the bloodstains from where these people had bled out. So in the journalism world, they call the sports department the toy department. This was very much not the toy department anymore, very clearly. And the other thing that was very different from sports is, from a storytelling standpoint, sports is fantastic because you get this full narrative arc every time you go out to the ballpark. You get beginning, middle, end. You can interview the hero. You can interview the GOAT. You get post-game stats. You get all this kind of stuff. Versus at that vacant lot in Newark, well, we know the beginning, but we didn't know, okay, why were the people there? Why were they killed? Who killed them? We didn't know any of that. And as time went along, the crime wasn't solved. And so for me as a storyteller, that was very unsatisfying. And so one day I just sat down and started inventing what really did happen in that vacant lot in Newark, New Jersey. And that is what launched my career in fiction.
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author Brad Parks. Brad's latest novel is The Last Act. And we're going to talk a little bit about the novel in just a minute. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about, well, I've read the book, and it's an incredible book. But it opens up with the FBI hiring an aging child actor. So you can think maybe Leave It to Beaver, you know, Opie, anybody like that. But they have to go undercover in a West Virginia prison to extract some vital information from a convicted money launderer who'd rather keep his head down. And the protagonist in The Last Act is Tommy Jump, is what he's known as by his fellow actors. And perhaps he is not the ideal prisoner, some people would say, because he is not a tall man. He's, I think, 5'2", 5'4". But he's very well built. He works out a lot. And so this is a great point to launch his new acting career, but it's a very kind of different production.
Right, yeah. Do you think something that might go wrong if I send an out-of-work actor into a federal prison? So Tommy is, you know, I think Tommy is a poignant character for anybody who has ever had a dream that maybe isn't working out quite as well as they hoped. So he's a former child Broadway star, but now he's 27 years old, so he's too old for the kid parts he used to play. As you mentioned, he's not great of stature, so he's too short to be the leading man, but he's also still a little too young for most character roles. And he suddenly finds himself in the situation where his fiance is suddenly pregnant. He's going to need to support his family. So when the FBI, and it turns out one of his childhood chums is now an FBI agent, comes to him with this wild idea, hey, we want you to pretend to be a bank robber or a convicted bank robber, and we want you to go to this prison, and we want you to cozy up to this banker in hopes you can find where he has hidden these documents. I mean, it's a wild, wild idea, right? But Tommy is out of work, and he's got this family, and he almost has no choice but to say yes. And that is the basic premise of The Last Act.
And one of the things that I think it's okay for me to reveal this, the fact that...
Oh, go ahead. Ruin it all, Louis.
One of the FBI agents is a schoolmate of Tommy's.
Right, right.
And once they, as you mentioned, his girlfriend is pregnant, he has to do this for quite a bit of money. It's a lot of money that he's going to get, but it's also a big risk, as you mentioned. And thrown in here into the novel are a bunch of different characters, and one of them actually is tied into El Paso.
Which one is tied into El Paso?
I think he just stops here, perhaps.
Yeah, that's right. So one of the cartel foot soldiers,
yes,
does make a stop in El Paso, because I have a the cartel. So I'm not sure how much you follow cartel business, Louis, but I basically patterned my cartel after Jalisco New Generation. Now, you know, everybody knows that Sinaloa has kind of is on its knees and El Chapo has been defeated and whatnot. And so what rises up to take the place of Sinaloa? Well, it's like ISIS in the Middle East. What, you know, like we got rid of Saddam, we thought he was horrible, and ISIS is worse. Jalisco New Generation has very much been that in the cartel world. So I kind of in my fictional world, I call it New Colima Cartel. And I have them taken over a tunnel from Sinaloa, and the tunnel goes under the river and pops up in a produce distribution stand, a produce distribution warehouse right outside of El Paso, Texas. So I have one of the cartel foot soldiers who is heading north to investigate where this banker is. Yes, he in fact stops in El Paso. So I hope I haven't maligned your town in any significant way.
No, you have not.
By having this happen here, because I think most of thinking America knows that El Paso is a lovely, lovely place for whatever our president might have to say about it.
And it's interesting too. The head of the cartel, El Vio, is quite a character as well.
You know, one of my problems, and maybe it's good that I write crime fiction, I always fall in love with the bad guys. I do. So, yeah, the bad guys are Herrera. He's kind of an up-and-coming foot soldier in the cartel. And El Vio is the boss because, of course, you know, all of these cartel bosses always have these mysterious nicknames. So El Vio translates to the seer. And this is a somewhat ironic nickname because El Vio only has one eye, and yet he still sees everything. So, you know, you always start off with, like, okay, they're the bad guy. But, you know, the thing is, bad guys are never bad guys in their own heads, right, Louis?
Right.
And so they can always kind of justify what they're doing. And in that act of justification, I end up empathizing so much with my bad guys that inevitably I fall in love with them. So I probably am guilty once again of falling in love with my bad guys.
Because you have the power to do whatever you want with these characters, tell us a little bit, Brad, about when you're sitting down and when you're writing, and as you mentioned, fall in love with the bad guys, does it kind of tempt you to go a certain way when you're writing, or perhaps later on your wife or somebody else, your editor, will say, you know, Brad, perhaps we need to not put this guy up on a pedestal so much, or let's change it a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I think the thing is, honestly, with every character I write, I can close my eyes and I can see that character and I can hear their voice. Sometimes I really, actually with Louis, like talk to myself in the voice of that character. And even though I might not do the accent or the inflection all that well, I still need to do that. I need to hear what they sound like. So to me, they are real people that just happen to exist in my head. And what's fascinating to me is, I never plot out my novels. I really never know exactly where they're going when I start. I just kind of take these real people, put them into often very difficult situations, and then say, okay, go ahead, work your way out. And what's interesting to me is if I am having a character do something that they do not naturally want to do, the scene doesn't work. And it always generally takes me a day or two. It's like, God, why is this scene not working? Why? What is this? What's going on? And then I realize, oh, it's because I'm having Elvio do something that just doesn't make sense for Elvio. Or, you know, you can fill in the blank for any character. So it's remarkable how organic it ultimately feels. Like, you know, it's like you have these real feeling, real seeming people doing real seeming things. And I kind of followed them. I always say that books are, they're really like your children. And I don't know if you're a parent as well, Louis, but, children take on a personality almost like independent and irrespective of the person who created them, as you know, and books very much feel like the same way. Like, for me, this was very much the book that surprised me, probably more than any book I've ever written. And it's because, like, I would kind of follow each scene to its logical conclusion, and at the end there would be a twist that I didn't see coming, and I'd say, well, okay, I guess I have to follow that now. And you follow one twist to the next twist to the next twist, and eventually you get to this place where you just did not anticipate at all, but man, what a fun journey along the way. Or at least I hope if I'm having fun, you as the reader is having fun as well.
We're speaking with New York Times bestselling author Brad Parks. Brad's latest novel is The Last Act. It's a novel about the FBI, hiring an aging child actor to go undercover in a West Virginia prison to extract vital information from a convicted money launderer who'd rather just keep his head down. And we've been discussing a little bit about Brad's past, the character development, and a little bit more of this novel. Now, you mentioned as when you're describing and when you're writing about these characters, sometimes I would imagine as a writer, they kind of just come to you. And I'm wondering about, since you discussed a little bit about your first news assignment, quadruple homicide, is that something that perhaps also you put in the back of your head for, maybe later?
Oh, I mean, I really started writing that novel probably within a month of when it happened. So it wasn't necessarily storing that one. But I think most of the time, when it comes to ideas, I find that, yes, there is a marination process. And, I always joke that I get about 10 ideas for books a week, and 10 and a half of them are probably bad. But every now and then, you get that one idea that kind of stays with you, and you keep coming back to it, and you keep coming back to it, and eventually it sort of builds up, because every time you come back to it, another character or another piece of it kind of comes to you, and eventually it gets this critical mass in your brain where you go, okay, I need to write that book now. So I think, most writers are probably always bookmarking that thing or keeping track of that conversation, or you meet that person and you think to yourself, okay, I'm gonna use that someday. I always love when a group of writers meets, say, a fascinating character, and we talk to this person, and then the person wanders away, and then the group of writers all looks at each other and go, okay, who's got dibs on that one? I got dibs on that. Okay, I got that guy. because we're all just low-life thieves, basically. We are constantly purloining from our own lives that which we put into our fiction.
In an interview we did last year, I remember Linda Fairstein saying something about that. You know, when you're with a group of writers, you see people and you kind of all get ideas and you have to decide, okay, how are we going to split this? How are we going to divvy this up?
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And basically, the ironclad rule is, if somebody is willing to pick up the check, well, then they own the idea. That's just it.
Speaking on about other authors, I think it was on your webpage that I read that some people have defined you or labeled you the literary love child of Janet Ivanovich and Harlan Coben.
Right. Yeah. So I have this unfortunate thing that creeps up in my novels. Life is funny to me. It just is. And human beings are these incredibly clever, incredibly funny little monkeys wandering around the planet. And I'm endlessly amused by what they do. And I think that often seeps into my fiction, even though I'm really trying to write very serious books. Sometimes the humor does get in there despite myself. So I think that's why you get the Janet Ivanovich and then the Harlan Coben as well. Those are writers that maybe bring a little bit of a sense of humor to their books. And I always say that, you know, that's an okay thing. I think sometimes the publishing world has a hard time knowing what to do with a book that's a little bit funny. But I always say that, you know, for me, and maybe this is because I was a nerd growing up, and I still am a nerd, you know, books were like my friends, right? And I want friends that can be serious and silly. You know, I want friends who can contemplate the nature of the universe with me, and then friends who can snicker over something completely inane. And that's maybe what I try to bring to my books, even as I'm, you know, wrangling with these serious topics, like, you know, in the case of The Last Act, we have, you know, money laundering and we have a drug cartel and we have, you know, all this heavy stuff happening. But, you know, Tommy Jump, the out-of-work actor, also kind of brings that funny way of looking at the world. And so now and then he'll just say something that's a little bit humorous. So I think maybe that's where the Janet Ivanovich Harlan Coben comparison comes out. And Louis, I've seen their book sales number. I'm not going to complain. That's okay with me.
Tell us a little bit about writing today's world, where we are, because as you mentioned, life is funny, and you know there are some things that hit us hard, but there's always a laugh as well. Has it made it harder for you as a writer to write in a politically correct world?
Well, in terms of straight up political correctness, that's not a huge part of my thought process, no. I mean, I'm maybe a little more careful with my language than I used to be. But, you know, I sent my first book, six books in Newark, New Jersey, which is a really tough city where really tough things happen. And by the way, it's a very diverse city. It's, you know, it's black, it's brown, it's immigrants, it's this, it's that, it's whites, it's Jews, it's everything. And, you know, I find it goes back to what I talked about earlier in the interview. The people are real to me. And I think as long as you're making an honest attempt to represent real people, you're going to be okay, because readers are going to say, yeah, okay, that seems plausible. I've met someone like that. And, you know, like I recently read, you know, don't get me started on call-out culture, but, you know, a YA book that suddenly got, you know, a Twitter storm because the writer dared to make a minority, and I can't even remember what minority the person was a member of, the bad guy. And to me, it's like, well, now, wait a second. If you can't have, and I think it was both an ethnic and religious minority, but whatever, if you can't have an ethnicity or a religion or a color or whatever, this is perverse and strange sounding, I know, but if you can't let them be the bad guy, guess what? You are robbing them of part of their humanity, because part of humanity is, dang it, we all get to be the bad guy sometime. So I think as long as we represent in fiction that sensibility, that the range of human possibility remains possible for everyone, male, female, black, white, doesn't matter. And as long as you're treating all of your characters with that equally harsh brush, if you will, you know, I think readers know that, and you're ultimately going to be okay. I don't know if that answered your question at all, but dang, you got me fired up, Louie.
Good. We're going to have an encore for The Last Act, I guess.
We'll see. So The Last Act, and I'm not allowed to talk about this too much, but actually is currently, they are exploring a television series based on The Last Act. And if that does, in fact, move down the the hallway a little bit, I think there's a very good chance that we'll see some more of Tommy Jump, because it's a concept that is infinitely repeatable. The out-of-work actor who goes undercover for the FBI, and I can certainly imagine sending Tommy into all sorts of awful places.
You mentioned the fact that, well, becoming a television program, because of social media now, books are everywhere. They're on your phone, they're on your tablet, and you can listen to audiobooks. I enjoy listening to audiobooks. It's a great way. How has audiobooks affected you in any way, Brad?
You know, first of all, yes, you're onto something, Louis. Audiobooks are actually right now the fastest growth industry for publishing. We are increasing our audio sales more than we are increasing anything else. For me, it doesn't change that much, because I've actually always had a step of my editing process where I read things out loud. I write by ear, and so I kind of need that step in my process. So I've always had the audiobook in mind, because I'm always reading it out loud to myself. So it hasn't changed much for me. And I don't know, I'm excited by everything that's been happening. As an author today, my work is more easily and readily consumable by people than any author at any point in history. And that's a great thing, because it's just, it's more channels through which we can tell stories. I love it.
What does Brad Parks like to read?
So I like to read crime thrillers. I really, write what you like. Isn't that the rule? Now my one affliction is I cannot read fiction while I am drafting fiction. So I do have huge chunks of my year where, unfortunately, I can't read, such that when I'm in between drafting phases, or I'm not editing or whatever, I will read just absolutely voraciously. And I love crime thrillers. I mean, my favorite idea of a vacation is still, let me throw 7 books and 2 bathing suits in a bag and go on a beach somewhere and read for a week. They'll be mostly crime thrillers.
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author Brad Parks. His latest book is The Last Act, a novel. Brad, you were talking earlier about, with a comparison of you being the love child of Janet Ivanovich and Harlan Coben. But there's another thing and when you talk about humor, this is funny, what you wrote here. Apparently, you were also, in 2011, named crime fiction's sexiest authors. And you say, for which there is no explanation beyond blindness.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're on the radio right now, so maybe it's good, because, otherwise your listeners would be so distracted by my apparent animal magnetism. I think, yeah, being named sexiest author is, like being named the best ski slope in Florida. It's a pretty low bar when you get right down to it.
And I noticed in the book also, and you may have not done this intentionally, but you probably did, the Me Too movement is in there. Mm. When Amanda is interviewing at the Van Buren Gallery, and the director there tries to approach her.
Yeah, so I was, the lead time in publishing is long, as you may be aware. So, this book that's coming out in 2019, well, I was writing it really, during the middle of 2017, toward the end of 2017, just as Harvey Weinstein is starting to come out, and just as all of this other Me Too stuff is starting to stir up. And, authors are human beings. We are creatures living in the world that we are. So I was reading all these stories, and I was as horrified as anyone else. And, here I had this young woman going into the office of a powerful older gentleman. And, well, yeah, I guess, you can't help but have some of those things kind of seep into your writing. So, I very much wanted Amanda to have to experience that. And I don't want to give too much away, Louis, but I do give my Harvey Weinstein of the art world does get his comeuppance at the end. Because, dang it, that felt good, man. Sticking it to one of those guys, oh yeah, I enjoyed that.
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author Brad Parks. Brad's latest novel is The Last Act. The character development, sometimes when we watch something on television or read a book, we can sometimes identify with one of the characters. And I think we can all identify at what point with Tommy's mom.
Mm. Yeah, so Tommy's mom is a former comedian who when she got pregnant with Tommy, was forced to give up on her dream of comedy, and she gets a very kind of steady job working in the front office at the local high school, which she very much still runs like it's a comedy show, you know, making fun of everybody who comes in, and you know, she's on stage all the time. But I think what's particularly poignant is that we have Tommy, who is trying his very best to keep his acting career alive, even though, you know, with all of the barriers we've just talked about. And he sees his mom, who had to give up on that dream, and how shocking that is for him. I think we all reach that point in life where we suddenly realize that our parents were actually human beings who actually had, you know, real dreams and aspirations outside of us as children one day as well. And so I think that, you know, Barb is always kind of out there for Tommy as like, well, I could do that, or I could try to hang on, or, you know, and he sees how that works on her. But so, yeah, I love Barb Jump, and she also has some of my favorite lines in the book. Like, she's able to guess that Tommy's fiance is pregnant simply by looking at her backside. And, you know, Tommy hasn't even told his mother yet that this woman is pregnant. So he said, "My mom, how did you know?" She says, "Oh, honey, it's first trimester ass. We all get it. Even your little walking stick of a mother. One day I was the same scrawny little girl I'd always been. The next day I look like Kim Kardashian."
And
so that's Barb Jump.
You sound just the way I imagined her. And one of the things that we do have in common, aside from both of us being writers and journalists, you are an award-winning author. I am not, but you like to drink Coke Zero, and that's my vice.
Amen, brother. I am glad to meet a fellow convert. I have a can. You can't see it because it's radio. I have a can sitting just beyond my telephone right now. It's what keeps me alive, man.
Well, you need to probably buy a case after this book starts selling even more.
I always keep some on hand, and you come over sometime, Louie. We'll tilt back a Coke Zero together.
Great. Brad, tell us a little bit about social media. Where can people find you? Do you have a Facebook page, etc.?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's www.facebook.com/Brad Parks Books, or you can find me on Twitter at Brad_Parks. Or if you want to be quote-unquote old-fashioned, you can just go to my webpage, which is www.bradparksbooks.com. And if you hit the contact form, you will find a way to send me a message. And I love getting notes from readers, and I always write back.
Brad, thank you so much for being with us.
Louie, real pleasure.
We've been visiting with New York Times bestselling author Brad Parks. His latest novel is The Last Act. Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTEP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Sam Cassiano. We had help from Gerardo Moreno and Robert Lopez. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sainz.